Hello. Welcome to the End of Seeking podcast, episode 24. It is December the 20th today, which means this is our Christmas / seasonal holidays.
Yeah, what's the politically correct thing to say these days?
I don't know. Happy holidays.
Yes.
But it's very much Christmas around here, isn't it? Yeah. In Wales, it's all Christmas trees and...
very festive. Yeah. Lights everywhere.
Yeah. Okay, a couple of announcements I think I'll make before we jump into the podcast, which is to say a couple of events coming up. Mention them at the beginning so that you don't miss them at the end. Okay, so this Friday, 22nd of December, Imogen will be doing a one-hour winter solstice transmission from 5 to 6 p.m. UK time, and that's a Zoom meeting. Join in by going to the website beyondimogen.com, and you'll have all the links and the details there. And next week, starting the Friday after Christmas, 29th of December until the 7th of January, you're doing the 10-day diving deep winter retreat.
Yeah, my favorite retreat of the year. This is my favorite way to end the year and begin the new one. And
lovely.
This time I'm doing a 10-day one rather than a 7-day one. Oh. So, yeah, really looking forward to going deep with everyone and really finding a very deep, soft and gentle container for us all.
I really like them. Because not that I participate, I go on my own.
Sometimes you do, actually.
Sometimes I have, yeah. But I get to retreat because you're so, you know, engaged and involved. Immersed. And it's a real good, great way for me to, us, to avoid having to go to New Year's parties.
Yes. Just like, I think this is the fourth year in a row that I've done this.
The hermit in us. I mean I like Christmas. I like, you know, having a Christmas day and all that. Yeah, that's the holiday around here. But then I'm ready to just go quiet. And I like that you say it's like a complete withdrawal as an end.
Yeah.
And a beginning as well. Top off the year and start.
Sort
off
of sets you off right, I find, of like, you know, in the dead of winter, although technically not, but, you know, really in... it feels like you're really in winter, and just it's the perfect time to have that reset, to have that sort of re-anchoring and recalibrating without input.
Yeah.
We're so used to being inundated, particularly in this day and age, inundated with all this outside conditioned information, taking on so much. And I think it's really valuable to take those times of retreat, for whether they be for a day or lots of days, where there's no outer sort of conditioning, and it's really about listening and reconnecting with the depths of your being and really finding out what's there to be met, what's there to be discovered and listened to.
Mm. Yeah, in deep rest, very restful.
Yeah.
So that's that 10-day diving deep winter retreat, Friday 29th of December to the 7th of January. If you want to find out about that or join in, go to beyondimogen.com.
Yeah, and I'm very... as with all of the things I offer, I make it very flexible for people to dip in and out as they can. So I know it's often a busy time of year as well, family-wise, for people. So
it's funny, I spent several years of my life living and working in meditation retreats. And so I really got into the habit back then of... well, two things actually. One was really nice for me was that this thing of service. Mm-hmm. People would arrive. Often, we would have the course maybe 2 weeks, and it would start before Christmas, mm-hmm. and it would finish into the new year. So, you know, you do it slightly different. You're leaving Christmas and you know, the main seasonal time, the feasting, the joy and all that's there. But then after that, going into the settle thing over the new year. But it was I was surprised so many people really loved stepping out of that whole Christmas thing.
I think it's a relief for a lot of people.
The whole holidays thing. Because it can be quite full on.
Yeah.
And the it's almost the demand to be
joyous and happy.
You know, and don't get me wrong, I love being joyous and happy. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, but tricky...
there are other things that go along with it as well. Dynamics. There's the consumerism and there's the, you know... be it family and friends and the demands to be to be something, to be in a particular mood, which is the shadow of the real celebration that can be. There can be a real true celebration. I think I really love the winter holidays, you know, in the rawer sense of it, in the sort of darkness of winter. Mm. You know, the sun is at its, you know, lowest ebb, and then it's that solstice thing, you know, the rebirth of the light,
yeah,
you know, and the mythic, the Christian mythic thing, and the Hanukkah and all of it. It's the light
and Diwali,
in the darkness, and this is very primal to Diwali. Yeah, this is the celebration, the acknowledgement of the cycle, mm-hmm. going into the deep winter, deep, and at the lowest point, then it's reborn. The light is reborn, and you know, I love that. I love the sense of the cycling of nature and the necessity for these different modes. But yeah, I used to love sort of being able to step out of it. It was the first time I really had that excuse working in these places. Mm. And people would come who felt the same way, and we'd feed them and we'd do nice long meditations and have sort of talks and whatnot. And it was just a different quality of experience at a different time of year. So it really was a retreat,
mm.
you know, but it wasn't ascetic. You know, this idea of retreat is not ascetic. It's very beautifully held,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what you're offering here. And when you do these, you know, it's such a beautiful held space for the participants.
Yeah. Bubble, the retreat bubble, I call it.
Yeah, and it's warm.
Yeah,
you know, there's a warmth to how you hold these retreats, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, I think there's a sense of camaraderie, a sense of support, a sense of care to all those that are participating, even if it's just for one session. That's the only word I can use, a sense of held, a sense mm-hmm. of being held.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that starts before the retreats. I've said this before, but it's, you know, it starts in the days and weeks before the retreat.
Yeah.
And goes past the retreat as well. I'm already feeling the energy of it sort of coming into play.
Yeah.
It's like a preparation for the sort of sacred, holy space is kind of what comes to mind.
Yeah.
And I know it's virtual in this case, but it's still real, just the same.
It's really held, yeah.
It's just the same. It's the same as if you're turning up physically to a retreat. The energy of it creates the sense of held.
Mm. So you had something you came up early and you're gonna
so I just had a session this morning with someone, and something came up at the end of our session, and this person encouraged me to write about it, and I thought, well, we're recording a podcast this afternoon, so maybe I'll speak about it instead. Yeah. And actually it sparked a discussion between you and I, so I think there's possibly some legs in there. And it's a topic that we haven't really sort of gone into much. So, so this person was talking about different methods of teaching and teachers, and they themselves are someone that guides and supports people. You know, and how to do that, how to be that. And this was my response, and I sort of, they encouraged me to write it,
but I actually transcribed. More or less what you said to them.
Yeah. This is what I spoke out, and this is what was transcribed. So I just wanted to read this because I think it'll be a jumping off point for us. It's not very long. So I said, there are so many different ways of doing this work, of holding space and guiding and supporting others. So many ways of awakening to our nature and integrating and embodying that fully. So many ways of being. If I could impart anything to anyone, it is to trust your way. To not assume that just because there's someone, a teacher or such, that seems amazing and they have all the answers and they're doing it in a way that you aspire to even, that their way is the correct way. Do not diminish and take for granted the wisdom that you hold through your life experience, through your body, through your embodied spark of consciousness, through the particularity of your flavor and footprint of life. That is actually what life is gifted to this world and birthed into existence, and not a mistake at all. We cannot dishonor life or ourselves by assuming there is any part of who and what you are that is incorrect. And in that way, you can use the model of other people, but never step away from the entire trust of whatever you are walking through. It is not only the thing you are navigating and walking through, but also your gift to life. It is how you are being and showing up and transmitting in this world at this time.
Nice.
So it's not to say that ways of teaching, ways of guiding, ways of supporting, ways of transmitting, ways of being can't be useful and helpful as models. But at the end of the day, if a teacher is demanding you to show up in a particular manner, and that manner goes against your own way of being, your own light, your own voice, your own expression, that actually I feel there's a great disservice there. I think we are all unique embodiments, and that brings something to the table. And I guess what I was trying to talk to this person about was, and what they were encouraging me to share more broadly, was that we have to trust that. We have to trust that. We have to trust the light that we are, the expression that we are.
Of course, I bumped into the shadow of that.
Yeah.
Which is great, which is why the conversation got interesting. And which is to say, and I'm going to reference something here. There's a famous controversial occultist called Aleister Crowley, who many people would have heard of, but he was incredibly, incredibly insightful, if somewhat controversial. But he, through his contact with, you know, spiritual realities, came up with what he called the Book of the Law, which was a view of what the new eon, the rules of the new eon. And he controversially said, the law, that what was it? The do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Mm. That was the message he received. And love is the law, love under will. But this do what thou wilt. And that's such a controversial statement, because, which is what, you know, follow your way, let's say. Do what you consider to be. Follow, do your will.
Yes.
But the question is,
who's the you?
Who's the you?
And this is why we decided to talk about this today on the podcast, because that's where we got to quite quickly.
Yeah.
Who's the you that is following? Like, so your way, if your way is based from the ego,
yeah, it's going to ignore the teachings, yeah, of anyone offering up, you know,
any
some insights,
and
you go, no, that's not my way, because I want to go and do this. And it's like, and so, but when you dig into that, I mean, Crowley was talking about, you have to do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Mm-hmm. But what do you really will? What is the nature
of
the
law?
Who is the one? Yeah,
who's the thou that is willing?
You have to, so the work is to identify the true will and so in this, yeah, case, when you're talking about
your way,
yeah, your way
it's your fundamental essence's way,
yeah,
your nature's way, your highest way, let's,
yeah,
call it. And I'm not talking about highest in terms of value judgment. I'm talking about like least corrupted, least distorted.
Yeah. Find your true will,
most
your
true way,
being your true way. Yeah,
yeah.
And but I think something else aside, you were kind of talking about was that, you know, the work that you do in particular is very much about creating the conditions in which the person you're working with is held in such a profound and deep active way that they themselves can find that way.
Exactly.
And find their truth and their unfoldment. You know, you're there as a holding and also as a guide.
Yeah.
But you're actually facilitating their self-discovery.
Yeah, it's not about them
assisting or guiding this.
It's not about them taking on my point of view at all. It's about them, about me, I guess, me encouraging them to trust and discover and identify and remember who and what they are, and then live out the true and full expression of that in the best way possible, yeah, and meet all aspects of themselves. And to me, that's my way. But that's not to say that's everyone else's way. And that, so this is where this conversation for me sort of is rooted in is that there are many ways in which what we would call teachers or guides or sages or gurus or whatever word you want to use in there, there's many different expressions and ways in which they are supports to other people.
Yeah.
And I want to say that is true of everyone. There is many ways in which people show up and are a gift to the world, are a light to the world. And you cannot start comparing those.
No.
You know, I just sit, you know, here we go. Can't start comparing. And here I'm about to compare you and I. We have different ways of being. We have different expressions, different ways in which we turn up for people. You cannot compare that. You cannot make one better than the other. What you can say is that resonates with me right now. Mm. How that person is turning up and what they're offering, how they speak, what they're revealing, what they're showing, how they guide me to myself, that resonates with me right now. That makes sense. That gets me. Mm. That's great. And so I guess it's to really honor that is to honor the differences in teachers and teachings, but also recognize the difference and see in that difference that not all teachers and teachings work for the individual, or they might change. There might be different seasons or different points of our life where something resonates and then something doesn't. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, to me, all of that points to the ability to recognize that actually there is such a varying degree of differentiation between teachings and teachers, that it, if it's doing its job, it points you back to yourself to see that actually I get to be me here. Yeah. I get to be my truest me sense.
Yeah.
I don't have to get rid of that, excise that. I don't have to not be this expression that I am. And actually, it's really, to me, a mirror and a way of embracing who and what you are, what the expression of consciousness you are.
Well, I think each of us are a unique gift, as you say, of being, where we're not a mistake. There are ways in which we as embodied beings are conditioned, are traumatized, mm-hmm. are, you know, twisted out of shape spiritually and physiologically and psychologically and emotionally, all these different ways we're kind of twisted out of shape. So the work is, in a sense, untwisting, unraveling, unknotting the things that would corrupt us from our lived clarity and flow.
And it's often those untwistings that actually are our greatest lessons and therefore our greatest gifts to others as well. As often, what I've found is, like, some of those hardest lessons of my life have actually been the lessons that I've had to walk through have actually ended up being the way in which I can support people because I've walked through those. And so I think that's part of what I was saying to this person is, like, you know, don't assume the difficulties that you're walking through are just for you.
Right.
On one level, sure. On one level, it's you that's walking through that. It's you that's sort of, you know, maybe walking through a loop that you find yourself, a karmic loop that you find yourself, which is just really difficult, really intense. But I think it's also to bear in mind that while it is you walking through it, that has impact on the world as well. And certainly as you walk through that, you gain wisdom and insight from that.
And life gains wisdom.
Yeah,
on that basis,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And also you gain the ability, possibly if that's your calling, if that's what life wants of you, the ability to support others who are walking through that as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would say my biggest struggles in life have been my greatest gifts. I didn't always see it that way, for sure. It's very hard when you're walking through something to see it that way. But in hindsight, I see.
Well, I think the experience of suffering definitely engenders a deeper sense of compassion for another. If, you know, not, don't get me wrong, sometimes the suffering's so bad it twists you so far out of shape that it can go the other way.
Yeah.
But even that ultimately will circle back to the ground of our sort of essential goodness, our essential wholeness.
Yeah.
So, you know, that suffering, that difficulty, that navigating that, especially if you find in your experience difficult as there might be, that acceptance, that clarity, the tenderness for another's difficulty.
Yeah.
And but not just the tenderness for that and the compassion for that, but also, as you say, the capacity actually to help them through that as well.
And
that becomes
them.
A very practical thing. Oh, your suffering and your struggles that you've actually come through will really help you.
It sort of gives you the capacity to hold someone when they are going through that. It's like, you know, we all want to be met in our depths, but if we haven't been met in our own depths, it becomes difficult to meet another in their depth. And so it's like it's to meet yourself in those depths allows you the ability to meet another in those depths too, and vice versa.
Absolutely.
And that's really healing, really strong work there.
Well, we're talking, you know, this has come up many times before in, you know, your work and even mine, is that you have to this is the gift of the clarity that you offer, and the space that you offer, is that by being that groundless ground in your own self, they're not going to bump into anything as they explore their depths, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to go and so we see this. So this plays out in our lives, in our normal lives, that sometimes you might have something that you really want to connect with someone on. You really need to share some suffering or some difficulty. I say suffering, but you know, but so some challenge, some suffering, some emotional or even intellectual, something going on in ourselves. And, you know, we might seek out someone, a friend or a family or whoever to support them. But if they themselves haven't and can't meet, if you start sharing something that's difficult for you and that triggers them and is difficult for them because they haven't met it, you're not going to get the satisfaction of being able to settle down into the boundlessness, to reach the true openness.
Yeah.
Because this, the heldness is a function of recognizing the groundless, boundless openness of our being, that we're not limited, that there's not like a place we can go and go no further, that we're always held, that the space of being that we are is always larger than the troubles that it might contain, than the problems that it might contain, that the seeming limitations are all held within this unlimited being.
And ultimate safety.
Yeah. But if you're, you know, bumping into that in yourself, bumping into your perceived limits in yourself, and then you try to connect with someone who you hope will help you navigate or ameliorate or even be a space for it.
But if they're not a space, expand out a little bit more.
Yeah, but if they themselves are, you're gonna. Yeah. So it, you know, I'd say, you know, finding someone who can, who has that capacity to infinitely hold, actually, without.
Yeah. Or just in a relative sense, hold enough to the depth that you need to go.
Yeah,
it is challenging. And I bump into people struggling with that all the time, finding people around them to be able to meet them in the depth of what they're going through and not try and fix them because they're trying to get out of it, you know. Like often you see that with people, is they it triggers something in them, and so therefore they want to fix it in you so that they don't have to feel that. And it's
Their own strategies of avoidance.
And it's not a malicious thing. It's not. No, it's just not that they meant in a bad way. It's just that you can start to feel very unseen in that. Then you can start to that feels more like a burden then. Like you're already struggling with what you're going through, and now suddenly you can't be going through what you're going through because it somehow bumps into someone else's difficulty with that as well.
Yeah.
This is a slight change of direction, but not entirely.
Pivot.
Not entirely.
Okay.
We were talking, was it last night? I don't know, my sense of time is notoriously notoriously sketchy. We were talking about picking up your cross to bear.
Yeah.
Your burden of life, and we all have them. We all have, and they change for sure. But yeah, it's just our conversation here somehow reminding me of that conversation we had whenever it was. That sometimes we can really resist and really, you know, not find the immediate yes to the challenge that has come our way in life. and you quoted, and I don't want to misquote it, so I'll start off and maybe spark what you remember.
I don't know, what are you going
exactly, yeah. I think it was Richard Rohr or someone speaking of, you know, where you don't find that immediate yes.
Yeah, exactly. And it, yeah, Richard Rohr, we did a podcast based on a book he wrote a couple of years ago. And it was great. But it was actually really beautiful to hear him, because Richard Rohr, I consider he's an awakened, you know, he's in his tradition, but he's non-dual, he's awakened to his nature. So that was really beautiful. But to hear him then talk about sort of a humility of experience, yeah. Right? And there was a couple of them. And one of them was around the kind of imposter syndrome that he experiences. Yeah. Huge imposter syndrome. It was very sweet the way you just opened it. You know, he's writing books. You know, he's written a bunch of books and he's doing talks. And he's like, I'm just such this. I know nothing. I'm just you. I don't know anything. I'm talking absolutely through my butt, blah, blah, blah. And then he'd read one of his books. He'd read some passion in his book and read it and go, oh, that's pretty good, actually. You know, that's right. You know, I stand by that. So, you know, that even that. Someone who as accomplished and yeah. as deeply insightful as he is, and, you know, who is someone who, you know, lives as his as true nature.
Yeah. Would and has still, something really profound to share.
Yeah, would
in
still
that
have,
regard to people right, with people.
Would still have these, you know, very human psychological doubts.
Yeah, I mean, right? I still do as well.
So that was one I thought that was beautiful, the humility. And where were you aiming
the
for?
The saying,
this?
Yeah, like so. You,
oh
the,
yeah, so and that
the
was
struggles. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, he was also talked, and again, I found it quite, you know, affirming and quite reassuring that you talked about something would happen or something, and, you know, something would happen to us, mm-hmm. to him, or something would happen, and immediately the instinct isn't yes, this big yeah. cosmic yes. And he said, you know, but the contemplative mind, let's mm. say, and the work is getting to that yes.
Yeah. And
it's
sometimes
there,
that can be a challenge.
Right. But and it's not necessarily, and the work that continues is sometimes it, you know, the inevitable reality of life occurs, and the instinct or the response is, nah.
Don't want to be going through this.
No, but, you know, he talked about getting to the yes.
Yeah.
Even though it might not be there on the surface, and that's very much an experience I have.
Me too. Yeah.
You know, of being and then, but just turning into it and getting to that yeah. where you realize, oh, it is a yes. But you, it, yeah. it's and that's part of the embodiment process
is
turning those sort of reactive disturbances
resistances
and stuff and using them to get those no's to get to the yes.
Yeah, and actually the way
is that the ground of it all?
Exactly, the way I come at that is actually softening to the no, saying yes to the no even is to me where I often have to start. If I'm struggling with something and there's a no in there, there's a yeah. resistance. The best quote strategy I've found is actually to turn into the no. And to soften
yeah,
to that,
exactly.
to say yes. Okay, there's a no there right now.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's just turn in. Let's yeah. explore this no, shall
right,
we? Let's explore
yeah.
what this is, what this...
Yeah. And so I think, it. You know, sometimes you really can have those no's. So I was having one the other night, and that's why I brought it up. It's like I was having one of those moments the other night. I'm like, I don't want to be going through things that make me grow
that
and
meme,
don't kill
it,
me
yeah.
and make me go stronger.
Yeah, yeah. Don't kill me, but make me stronger. I don't want it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was having one of those
yeah, yeah,
moments
yeah.
the other night. And yeah. And the, you know, in hindsight, it's quite comical. It's, you know, because you see the inevitability
yeah.
of it all. And
well,
it's
that's the word that comes up here. It's the inevitable.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And to cycle back a little bit to that first analogy you used, it was just to bear one's cross.
Yeah.
Well, what are we talking about there? When you're faced with the inevitable, right? When faced with the inevitability of what is, what are you going to do? Are you going to just, I don't want it, and resist it. But it's there. Yeah. Or you're going to, will it, you know, that's the myth, that's the metaphor, the myth, whatever, is to pick it up willingly, to go into that willingly. Yes, this is difficult. Yes, this is but to find that way where you can pick it. Yeah. It's and not forced it takes, on you. You're picking it up yourself.
And so sometimes that and takes that's a moment.
That's attitudinal.
Yeah, and sometimes it takes a moment. It takes a moment to get to the point where you go, yep, this is inevitable. And instead of resisting this and suffering this, I can welcome this. I can say yes. I can pick up this cross. I recognize that I must pick up this cross. And so when I recognize I must, there's a lightness that comes in the heart that finds that softness, that finds that tenderness, that finds that compassion, that finds that ability and that strength and that grace to pick up that struggle of that cross that you're bearing in that moment.
And I'd like to add that it can still be suffering.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? You know, it can still, even though you're saying that's, I think that's part of it. Yeah,
it's the deeper ground.
Yeah, it's like you are saying yes, in a sense, to this experience that you would construe as suffering.
Absolutely.
But actually in doing so, it's held in a deeper sense of non-suffering.
Exactly.
It's something like that.
It is exactly like that, I would say. It's the deeper ground of the yes includes and holds even the no's, the resistance, the suffering, the difficulty, the strife, the intensity. And I think, to me, that is a beautiful part of humanity, to see that is possible. It brings so much compassion. It brings so much compassion to our fellow humans, our fellow beings, our fellow animals, our fellow life.
The human condition, travelers, isn't it? You know,
to those that are really doing their best with what life is giving them in this moment.
It's really interesting. I don't know why this comes to mind. This up. Someone I mentioned before here, he's a theologian, historian, David Bentley Hart, and you know he's a theologian, very much a Christian theologian, but you know in the Orthodox tradition. But he's such a polymath. He's very schooled in things like Vedanta and whatnot. And he said when he was very young, he was touched deeply. As you know, he was always being in the Christian tradition, but he was touched so deeply and profoundly by the bodhisattvas and the idea of the bodhisattvas, which is to say, here is a being who has been released, let's say, liberated, is enlightened, and could quite happily disappear into the ocean of bliss from which he or she emerged from, but instead makes a vow to remain in this samsaric realm.
The relative.
Yeah, to liberate all beings.
Yeah.
And only then, when all beings have been liberated, will they themselves allow themselves, which is, you know, an eternal task, and that the compassion. And actually the other thing is that the bodhisattva dedicate all their merit to others, just give it away. And that's very reminiscent of the sort of kenotic tradition of Christianity, which is the self-emptying, the giving up, emptying of self. So all that's left is this divine presence moving.
Yeah.
So, and that self-emptying, we touched on it
last podcast, but actually I also had a really beautiful conversation with a friend a few days ago about this very topic of, like, you know, this friend was struggling with something they were offering and they were wondering if they'd done well, good enough, you know, they'd been, their offering was enough.
That's what we talked about last week.
But it's funny because this conversation came up in, you know, my real life with a dear friend, and it's this thing of offer without concern for how that lands or the outcome of it. Offer from the emptiness of your heart and let it be about the offering. Let it be about the love of what you're offering and not about who you're offering it to or how it's taken or whether it's useful or not or any of these things. And I think, you know, we're talking about offering right now, but we're also talking about our burdens and our difficulties in life. And I sort of, to me, I approach that in a similar vein of let me give it all. Let me empty myself of myself and do what I must, be what I must, act in the way I must. And that's that emptying out. And you take it all so much less personally then.
Well, we were talking about giving satsang as well. And for me, and there was this feeling of, I've done it for years, I'm probably starting the new year offering some satsang somewhere. But it was, you know, the humanness, the touch that Richard Rohr was talking about, you know, that, oh God, what am I got to say about anything? And, you know, so that humanness can still be very present, even though the flow of the sort of emanating nature of actually speaking satsang is often very, very flowing and very...
Yeah, it's very impersonal in that it's life but flowing then, through you.
Exactly. But then there can be this sort of feeling of, oh, yeah, maybe I should have said that, could have said that. You know, you start reflecting on whether it was... and you were like, yeah, sure, but that the same thing applies. Give it up. That's what, and this is the truth. That's what life wanted to be said.
Yeah,
that's how life wanted
that's
it to
how
go.
I approach it.
And I actually, it's interesting the way that life in all these moments will offer up counterintuitive expressions sometimes, and events and things that happen. That seem to be, that doesn't make sense.
Yes.
But there's something in this, in the Buddhist tradition, they talk about the Buddha nature itself, the Buddha, which is Buddha nature, is constantly teaching. It's constantly at work, returning... teaching in every movement of relative life to return all the beings back to their true nature.
Yeah,
it's always happening, and
through whatever mode or method.
Right, it's like the idea everything is satsang.
Yeah.
When you have those eyes, even if you don't have those eyes, it's true. Everything is teaching us all the time. Everything is returning beings home to their true nature.
A lesson, a wisdom, a growth.
So even something difficult or something you might judge as bad, awful, or,
exactly,
or whatever, that that's operating on that level. Life is an orchestration back to the self. That's how I see it, and that's how many of the traditions see it. It's like everything that occurs is in fact the way. Yeah,
it is the way. And I think that's where we started out this podcast, and that's what I was saying to this person in my session earlier today, you know, to find your way, because it is the way, to not assume that your burdens or your difficulties or the things you perceive of yourself that seem less than, to presume that isn't the way, that to presume that isn't entirely correct, and actually to embrace that and to be humbled by that, to be humbled by, okay, these are my lessons. This is where life is guiding me. And those lessons turn into gifts. They turn into, and I don't mean anything spectacular in terms of gifts necessarily, it can be, but I mean gifts in terms of the way in which you can be in service to life. That's what I mean by gift there. And to really trust that if life is putting you through these wisdom learnings, that it's not for no reason. It's not wasted. It's not purposeless. We may not understand it in a purpose human way, lens, let's say. But... that who we are and the things that we have gone through in life, both good and bad, have an impact in this world and have an impact on ourselves and have an impact on others. And we can't judge that too prematurely.
No, if at all.
Yeah.
I just had, you know, this thought, because this really touches on the nature and problem of suffering in general. And, you know, it seems to me, and the way I think about it or feel about it sometimes is, it's like a parental thing, you know, a higher being, Buddha, nature, God, however you want to frame it, is trying to bring our little self back into the fold, mm-hmm. by, in a sense. It's trying to heal and enlighten. That's just...
Yeah, and integrate.
And integrate. So we're going through life and we're having all these experiences, and sometimes we like them and sometimes we don't. And sometimes we suffer them. And we're so quick to judge. Often the suffering is to do with our judgment, mm-hmm. actually. Oh, this is unacceptable.
Oh, massively.
You know, something is happening and it's judged as...
good or bad.
Good or bad. And if we judge it as bad, we can call it suffering. And if we judge it as good, we call it, you know, well...
Enjoyment.
So it's so much of it is about... you know, how we judge it.
How we relate. Let's even go, you know, one step deeper. Like how you relate to something.
Yes. Yeah, our response, our relationship to experiencing and our judgment of that experiencing determines whether... I mean, I think that's what some people say, that we create our own reality. That's one take on that. That's mm-hmm. I think people mean different things by that, but that idea that we create our own reality, I would take at least some of that to mean it's the interpretations and judgments that we overlay onto reality, onto what is that determines how we then experience. Well, it's just the snake and the rope thing. You know, if you go into a darkened room and there's what appears to be a snake on there, the fear, you know, kicks into your body and, you know, panic. And then you switch the light on, you know, it's a coiled rope. Then you go, oh, you know, there's nothing
to be afraid of.
So to meet those judgments actually is quite an interesting exercise to sort of, you know, and go, oh, I'm suffering this. Okay, well, what is this experience?
What am I suffering?
What are you suffering? And what's the nature of your experience? And why is it suffering? Yeah. And let's look and feel into that.
Yeah, and often that requires us to not live in the conclusions, but actually live in the exploration. So a lot of our judgments and our suffering is based on conclusions that we've already made about what we're experiencing. And as soon as we live in the conclusions, we're solidifying it.
Yeah. And very left brain.
Yeah, it becomes very challenging to have any other experience other than the conclusion once you've made the conclusion.
Yeah.
So
it's a way of staying out of the experience, living in the, you know, the conclusions, the judgments, the
commentary,
the descriptions.
Yeah. And so to recognize that, I think, is a really good starting point for me. It's like to go, I've made a conclusion here. Okay, let me come back. And we've spoken about this in the podcast before. Let me come back to a place of exploration, a place of curiosity, a place of actually innocent meeting of what is prior to any judgments, analysis, or conclusions. It's at that point you start to directly experience what is rather than your relationship to what is.
Or what you're saying about what
exactly, is. Exactly. Your conclusion about what is. And therefore, you've decided it's good or bad and I'm going to suffer this because I shouldn't be experiencing this. And so it's really powerful to see that mechanism really clearly when you go, oh, that's what causes me suffering here. Not the actual thing, but that whole mechanism of judgments and conclusions and then relating to it as good or bad.
So we came in this week, we were going to say, hey, let's talk about silence this week, because silence is such a central...
actually, that was last week, but we didn't do the podcast last week.
Sorry, but we were going to talk about silence, and we might get to that at some point. But it does point back to this idea. What are we talking about sometimes when we're talking about silence? And what we're kind of talking about is a sort of no mind, which is to say the silence, when we're talking about the silence, what we're actually talking about often is the absence of discursive thought.
Yeah.
Right? Judgments, descriptions.
Commentary.
The absence of those things. What's here? What's present? It's silent, but it's full of aliveness.
Yeah.
It's what's here. And so a simple way in, I mean, often are, you know, you can, a simple way into a sort of a liberating experience of life is to, if you're having some emotional or some feeling that's difficult, and be aware of your commentary around it, and then just drop into outside of those descriptions and into what are you actually experiencing?
Mm-hmm.
What's the experience without the names, even things like pain?
Yeah.
What is the experience? Oh, my shoulder, my arm, my leg, my whatever, you know, or my head. Okay, what's the experience? And I'm not saying describe the experience. I'm saying get out of the descriptions of the experience and experience the experiences without those descriptions. And it just transforms the whole experience.
It does. Particularly pain, actually,
might call you very deeply into the experience of it. Yeah. It's funny how the intensity of the experience of pain.
And it can immediately, it's like you turn up the volume of it and it seems to get more intense. But actually, if you see what's happening is the overlay or the discursive view of it is sort of keeping it at arm's length. So what happens is you're bringing it closer. So it immediately starts to get bigger because you're bringing it closer. But actually, it's like as you meet it and soften into it, it starts to transform. It transmutes. Yeah. There's an alchemy that starts to take place when we're not living in the conclusions and holding it at arm's length.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, as I remember John Burney, one of his satsangs, talked about this years ago. It was like, you know, stay out of the descriptions and into the experience.
Yeah.
And he said, that'll go a long way to take you there. And actually he said that alone will take you all the way.
Yeah.
Because you start living then in the non-conceptual
space
of awareness being, you recognize what is rather than your descriptions about what is.
Yeah, and so therefore the loyalty to that overlay becomes less and less.
And you see what that overlay is then from that place of seeing and being. The overlay, that's an overlay. Yeah. At first it's like you're jumping in and out of something, and then in the end you go, I am this living, non-conceptual being.
Beingness.
Experiencing and witnessing
the thought of I, the belief of I, the commentary of the person.
Yeah. The belief that you're the thoughts.
Yeah. So we'll get round to a podcast on silence at some point. It's funny, I was sharing with another, I've had a very social week, so lots of friends that I've been interacting with, and I said, we might do a podcast on silence, and we were laughing that there's so much to be said about silence. There's so much that one could say about
the irony.
Silence. I know, and I love that because it's true. It's a topic that is very rich. It's a topic that has a lot to it, and yet it's all in a way of encouraging one to fall in love with their silent being.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's where, you know what, I'm not sure, we should not go too deeply into science, because I think there's a whole episode,
I think so. It feels like today's maybe wrapping up for today.
Yeah. Okay, so Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah.
Diwali.
Happy Diwali. Happy holidays. Whatever it is. Happy midwinter solstice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enjoy the depths of winter, knowing that the light is reborn from that depth of darkness.
Yeah. The spring finds its way.
Yeah.
From that darkness, from the winter.
There's a lowest ebb on which the tide turns.
And that is something to be embraced and really nourish, find that nourishment of the holding and the depths of that winter.
Yeah.
That time of quietness, that time of retreat, that time of rest.
It's really beautiful actually we're in the UK. It's sort of a grey white outside of clouds.
Yeah.
It's wet and damp, it's cold.
It's windy.
Unfortunately, we don't get a lot of snow in the part of Britain that we are, which is a shame. I like snow. I miss snow. We were in the Midwest for years, and I loved the winters. They were cold
and bright,
white
and sunny.
And bright. And, you know, it would snow, and then the snow would sit in piles for months. And then one day, March or April or even May, it would all melt away within about 24 hours. I love the whiteness of it. I love the, because there's no mistaking the seasons.
Yeah.
I like that. So that's what I would say. There's something about connecting with the season that you're in. It has knowledge and wisdom in it.
Yeah.
Connect with it. Just look out the window or go for a walk or just feel where you are as a part of the greater organism of being.
Mm, I love that invitation. That's a really beautiful invitation.
So I'll leave you with that. Okay, everyone. I thank you for tuning in this last year that we've been doing these podcasts.
Yeah.
We've been really enjoying sharing them, doing them and sharing them. And we will continue, God willing, into the new year. I don't know when the next one will be, because this is the last one before Christmas holidays, and then we might get one in next week. Christmas and New Year.
We'll see.
We might get one in before the New Year.
Yeah, and then I've got my retreat,
we'll skip a couple of that, but we'll definitely be coming back in the New Year. And thank you all for listening. And as I usually say, if you like it, if you feel like sharing it with someone who you think might enjoy it, please do so. And certainly subscribe so that you can hear about it when we release the new episodes. But thank you for your listening. And
we really appreciate
your attention.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone.
Bye for now.